You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's episode, just two things. Me, solo, obviously, as you can hear right now. There's no Tony Easton. We'll be back with each other on Tuesday. We have a mailbag podcast coming out either Wednesday or Thursday, so get those questions in to at Locked On Pacers, at T East NBA, or at FreedomAdam5. Any one of those feeds, send them to. We'll collect them to answer every one we get sent. Obviously, if we get sent too many, it might become two podcasts. Whatever it is, send in your questions. We'll get to those. The two things on today's podcast, simply breakdown of the Pacers loss to the Rockets. Just quick, probably 5 minutes, really quick hit on what happened. Difference between the first, second game. Pacers did right, wrong, all that kind of stuff. And then get to a big segment. I'm excited to talk about it. I previewed on Twitter on our Locked On account. And that is a discussion of what the Pacers need to do for the future. You know, I understand we're only 14 games in and everybody wants to say, calm the F down. It's not even Thanksgiving yet. Stop worrying about, you know, 2019 free agency or the trade deadline or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But I'm ready to talk about it. Today's game, really this week has been kind of, really the last 2 weeks have been kind of an indication of where this team needs to head and where they are heading. And I'm going to talk about that and everything. So look forward to that. But first segment is going to be on the Rockets after this quick break. Pacers lost to the Houston Rockets 115-103. This time, instead of being at home, they traveled to Houston on like Monday's game, which they lost 98-94 at home. Pacers were really kind of only in this game in the first quarter. They got outscored 44-23 in the second quarter and really were just clawing their way back constantly through the entire second half. I believe they went into the half down 24 points, then really never could cut it to less than 10. It felt like that was kind of the hump they couldn't get over. I know Sabonis missed 2 free throws when they were down 10. Oladipo kept missing a couple shots, had a turnover, all that kind of stuff. So, more competitive, I guess, or maybe more competitive than the score seemed at some points. Oladipo played in a ridiculous amount of 40 minutes. You know, I understand he was trying to be the heart and fire of the team, but man, that's a lot of minutes to play. And what was really seemed like an inevitable loss. I know they cut the 10. Okay, they're making a little comeback, but it felt like an inevitable loss they were going to lose to this team. Other stars of the night really were Bojan. He was 6-11, 3-5 from 3 for 20 points. He continues to play really well from 3. I don't know where he ranks, but I know at some one point this weekend at least he ranked in the top 5 in 3-point percentage, but nowhere near that in terms of attempts per game. He needs to shoot more 3s. Him, McDermott both need to shoot more 3s. I mean, that's just what this team needs to set those guys up better. You know, I think Bojan sometimes is kind of relegated almost to like some almost fourth option on offense, I guess, or almost like situational on offense, let's put it that way, to where they only give him the ball and they run a play, and they need to just do that more often, kind of run things for him off ball all the time, almost like the Warriors would do for Klay Thompson, just constantly run things off the ball for him. In terms of defensive-wise, Harden carved him up, 40 points, Chris Paul, 26, that's the big two. That's really a story. You know, a couple of Harden shots were just awesome threes. He kept getting fouled, things like that that, you know, it's hard when you only play a team twice a year, the Rockets, where you don't see Harden a lot if you're Indiana, because one of the things Harden does really well is you can't really put your hands on him defensively because he'll draw the contact if your hands really anywhere near him, to be honest, like within, you know, a certain amount of space. And so when you don't play him a lot, your defenders don't know that. Joseph got caught kind of with his hand in the cookie jar a couple times. Oladipo did too. Harden just really good at drawing contact and things like that, and he really kind of, you know, he took 18 of his 20 shots from 3, first of all. That's how he killed them, but you know, he had an awesome game, and it's kind of what I expected from him. You know, the first time they played, he hit some big shots, but he was as good. He only had 28 points. I know that's saying, you know, it's still pretty good for most players. But Harden, you know, Harden's really a 28-10 guy. In the first game, he only had 28-6. This game, he got closer to 40-9, close to his kind of his average in terms of assists. You know, they really only played 8 guys, and they crushed them with 8 guys. I think part of this also was the Rockets hadn't won a game at home all season, and they were sort of motivated to prove they could win at home finally. The Pacers, like I said, the second quarter, they just faltered. It just got out of hand. The Rockets' ball movement is great. When they get you kind of dancing, which they did, and got the switches and got them kind of just Pacers kind of scrambling, they have such good passers in Harden and Paul, they find the guy. You know, and that's what killed them. You know, the best plus-minus player for the Pacers, obviously, was Bojan. on the court. In terms of really struggles, I don't think Turner had a fantastic game. I think he was he had a couple blocks when in the first quarter when I thought they were kind of competitive, but then, you know, they fell apart and he was kind of no show second half, I would say. Sabonis had another good game. I thought, you know, maybe not great, but had a good game offensively, making 4 of 4. He missed some free throws here and there that I thought he could have made, and just, you know, a lot of it was just The team was like, they just had such an atrocious second quarter that it didn't really matter what happened the rest of the game. They just, like, couldn't claw their way back. And so while a lot of guys played good 3 out of 4 good quarters, they were just so bad in one quarter it kind of killed them the rest of the game. In terms of any really big differences, the three-point percentage, obviously. The Rockets were 20 of 47 instead of 15 of 47. I mean, there's 15 points they made up differently. And that's how they won. They expanded that lead from four-point win to a 12-point win, and really were up by 20 most of this game. So really that's where that difference comes in versus a 5-point game versus a 20-point game. The Pacers were a little better from the free throw line on the week, obviously. They shot 20 of 30 against the Rockets this time. They were a little better at 20 of 26. Overall, I think it was just a bad night for Indiana. I don't know. I think this Houston team is just, it gives them fits because they're kind of the opposite of them in terms of, like, they're going to shoot every shot's going to be a 3 almost, and they're not going to, you know, settle for mid-range. And so you're trading 2s for 3s a lot, and, you know, they do a very good job of the way the Cavs do the Pacers too, and that's isolating the best player on your worst defender and then getting you scrambling and kicking it around. And they utilize that corner 3 so well. And it's just, there's some things from the Rockets that I would love to see the Pacers pick out and use more. And, obviously they don't play the Rockets every day, but the Bucks are kind of becoming the Rockets, I think, of the East. They're kind of developing that style. So ultimately, the Pacers need to adjust somewhat in their game, and that really involves getting McDermott and building on the ball more. But again, it's something that can't happen overnight. It has to have something that happens over the season or in the preseason. Like, you could emphasize certain parts of the game, and I think the Pacers need to start utilizing, you know, their shooters more personally. But I don't, you know, they have to balance that with defense. And, you know, when you play teams, you know, like the Pistons, or you go against the Wizards, these teams aren't nearly as efficient or as, you know, concerned and play the way the Rockets play, then it's hard because you can't keep this up every night. But I would like to see the Pacers just develop some more three-point shots and kind of push some of their guys to take more efficient threes. You know, try to set up corner threes. Try to get Thad that corner three. I know they did one of them, he missed it. But, like, just shots like that, that they don't seem like they're trying all the time to get, because they're just, you know, McMillan says take the best shot you have. And that works to an extent, but it's, you know, on nights where you only shoot 46% and the other team shoots, you know, 47 threes and makes nearly 45% of them, that becomes an issue. So, you know, I don't know how much this will be an issue, I guess, because, like I said, there aren't a lot of teams in the East that do this like them. I mean, I'd say Boston shoots a ton of threes, but they aren't nearly, you know, they don't, I guess they just feel like Boston doesn't have the ability to make it as a high a percentage, but they do sometimes. But if Boston and the Bucks are going this way, and then Toronto obviously is just really efficient and they're a really good NBA team, so it just seems like the Pacers are probably a notch below any competitive team. They're probably kind of where they were last year, in that 4 or 5 spot, maybe even 6, but they're just not in the elite class of the top 3 teams. And then, you know, we can talk 76ers another time, and they're been involved with Jimmy Butler and kind of where that puts them. But this week kind of was a reminder that the Pacers are just kind of right below the best of the league, which is nothing to be ashamed of, but, you know, it's not what you strive for. And that's with that, let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to talk about why the Pacers need to strive to be better. I think Paul Pierce said it best. Victor Oladipo might be the loneliest superstar in the NBA. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. It's kind of true. It's really sad to think about, because it's kind of like the Pacers are in the same spot where they were 3 years ago with Paul George. But Victor Oladipo is awesome. I mean, 20 points every night. He brings the rebounds. He brings the hustle. You can see him kind of at halftime with the Rockets game. He was yelling at his teammates, this is not acceptable. Things like that. He's really bringing, like, a high level of basketball. And the rest of the team just does not bring it every night. And some of it is they aren't talented enough. Some of it is they just, it's inconsistency. And he is such a good player that it's kind of that. But, I mean, he brings it every night. Yeah, okay, he was 7-24. I think he would rather actually honestly take 18 shots a game if he could. But he has to take 24 shots, because if he doesn't take the shots, nobody else will. He's the only guy that can really create his own shot, it feels like, at times. And that's why it feels like we're in this inevitable kind of turn of, okay, are we going to try to improve on the margins? Are the Pacers going to try to just, you know, add a guy in the offseason with the cap space, you know, bring another Tyreke Evans, which is fine. You know, that improves you on the margins, but it doesn't get you to, you know, probably even competitive in the East. You know, they need it probably gets you that notch below Snow and keeps you a fourth seed in playoff run. And maybe that's what Herb Simon wants. Maybe that's what he wants. He wants to play in the playoffs every single year because he gets to cash the checks from the playoffs and it's good money and whatever. And honestly, at his age and his team has for a while probably be sunk money into it, didn't make any money. So maybe he doesn't care winning a championship, to be honest. Maybe he just cares, you know, let's get that playoff money. That's what it seemed like last year. That's all he cared about, was getting that playoff money. And maybe that's what they do. And with that, you know, it's disappointing as a fan because as much as I like them being competitive every year and I don't want this huge rebuild, and they don't have to rebuild because they have good players, you would like to see them take a risk where, you know, they say we're either shooting for greatness or we're going to fail and rebuild. Kind of like the Raptors, to be honest. They said, we're going to shoot for Kawhi and we're going to see what happens. And if he leaves in here, we'll just tear it up and rebuild. We have all these young guys and we'll figure it out. And we'll use cap space to get other guys. Like, I would love to see the Pacers do something like that. Say, hey, we have Oladipo. After this season, you got 1 year left. We're going to go big, go home. We're going to try to bring in a superstar. We'll try to re-sign both. We'll see what happens. If it doesn't happen, we'll keep Oladipo, build around him or whatever. We'll lose both, whatever it is, and we'll rebuild. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, being where the Pacers are is fun on a day-to-day for the regular season, but it doesn't get you to the goal. And I'm not even saying the goal is to win a championship because I understand it's hard. You have to get lucky. You have to draft the right guy. You have to sign the right guy. Your small market is really just draft. You have to end up with the right guy, the right moment, whatever it is. But, you know, Eastern Conference Finals, you know, competing as a team that's a legit shot to be in the East Finals every year is that's where that's kind of that level. That's what the Rockets have been at. They've been a legit team who every year has a shot to make the West Finals. And if things go right, they can get to the NBA Finals. That's where the Pacers were, what, 5 years ago now in the beginning of the Paul George West River. They were at this spot where, yes, they weren't the favorites to win the championship. They probably weren't even the top two teams to win the championship. But they were in the discussion where if things went right and an injury happened here or there and they were there. They were right there and they could compete for a championship. And it really almost happened. And the only way the Pacers can get there now is by trading future picks, young assets, whatever it is. It's mortgaging a little bit. I mean, to try to get somebody. And I don't know who it is. And I have some theories and I'm going to throw one out in a minute. But they need somebody. Somebody who can sit next to Victor Oladipo and go next to him and say, hey, give me the ball. I can score at any moment. You don't have to be the only guy tonight. You know, I heard a great kind of antidote from Evan Turner on Zach Lowe's podcast where he said, Dame Lillard, you know, when McCollum hits his first three shots in a game, whatever, Lillard knows I'm good. I can take off tonight. Kind of, I can relax. I can sit there and watch him keep feeding the ball. And it's that kind of thing that you just want. You know, Oladipo doesn't want that every night. Oladipo's an alpha. He wants to be the main guy. But, you know, some nights he would love to just say, hey, Oladipo, you know what? You're not having a great night. You're shooting 3 of 10 so far. But we've got player B out here who can just, you know, he'll score. He's feeling good. Just keep feeding him. You can kind of just do your defensive thing, help make plays. But you don't have to carry the offensive burden on both sides of the floor. Because really, Oladipo is kind of carrying both sides of the floor. He's guarding James Harden on one end. And he's playing and he's going against, you know, Chris Paul and I think it was James Ennis and other guys on the other end. I mean, that's what it's happening, which is, you know, at some point that wears on you. It wears on Paul George. It wears on these guys. And I understand Oladipo might be more inclined to stay here because of where he had his jump and he feels his kinship. But it's doing him a disservice to not try to go after somebody. And there's really like three ways they can do this. So the first one is they can trade one of their young assets, combining with some other stuff, to go after and get another good player. You know, I hate to say this, but Sabonis or Turner is their way to another, you know, a better player. Let's put it this way. Sabonis and Turner are probably like the notch below All-Star, right? So I'm talking about picking to get another All-Star level player. I'm not talking about Goran Dragic All-Star, but like a real top 25, 30 player in the league who has a future, I guess put it that way. And right, I would say Turner and Sabonis are probably notch below that, the 40 to 50 range. Guys who are really good at specific things, but have flaws in other spots that really drag them down and aren't, you know, the best player at this one thing. I mean, Turner is a very good defensive player. He's an okay offensive to mediocre offensive player. And Sabonis is kind of the same way. Now, I think if you can find a way to keep both, you definitely do. If you can get some guy on the cheap for picks, you keep both because both are awesome rotation players you have off the bench and defensively, and you need that. And that's what you need those players too in a championship team. But if you have to, you have to get rid of one and you have to flip one. You got to do it. I don't care who it is. You know, you could talk me into either one being flipped, but you might have to flip one to get a for sure number two. That combined with some contracts and a future pick could kind of do it. You know, the other way obviously is that getting a guy on the cheap, which is just, you know, trading a pick and some expirings for another guy in a bad contract, that could do it. That might work. I don't know if it will, but that could possibly work for the Pacers. And like the third way, obviously, is free agency. I mean, they go out and sign a guy in free agency or cap space, which is pretty rare. I don't think they'll do that. So kind of the way I see this, so I'm going to take a specific player because I'm not saying this guy's on the market. I'm saying this is a team that's on edge that could have guys who are available, and that's the Washington Wizards. They've struggled to start the year, to say the least. Look up the standings real quick. I just know they've been pretty bad recently. And they're kind of on this teetering edge of, like, do they just scrap it and rebuild? So the Wizards are 3-9. So they're on that edge. And so, you know, my co-host Tony East will say, well, wait till next summer. Don't worry about it now. But if, you know, if the Wizards are so bad they start trading assets at the trade deadline, the Pacers might want to get in on that. They just might. The Wizards are screwed with the John Wall contract. He's going to be there forever. There's no way to, you know, get off that. But possibly you could package, you know, I would say the prize of the Wizards is Bradley Beal. That's the guy you want. You know, do you have to take on Otto Porter? Do you have to take on a Jan Mahimi? You might have to do that. Jan Mahimi makes $16 million. Otto Porter is a good player, probably not worth 27 and a quarter. Plus, I think he has an 8% trade kicker, so he's probably not worth $30 million, but he's a good player. Beal is probably worth every bit of the $27 million, and whatever his trade kicker is. But if you could, you know, so let's say a deal, Beal and Jan Mahimi make $43 million combined. This is probably a deal that would involve next offseason, but maybe you trade them Miles Turner, use your caps, maybe you use cap space too a little bit, and maybe you send them like a Doug McDermott, or you do a sign and trade with one of your other guys. But maybe, you know, that's a deal I could see. Or a trade deadline deal, the way to get, I mean, $43 million is hard to get up to for the Pacers, right? It's hard to find $43 million for the Pacers, but it would involve probably a deal around. Let's see, if you throw in Bojan, Kojo, you can't trade Turner yet, that's a problem. So you have to trade Sabonis, and that trade Sabonis makes about 5. So that gets you to like 29, and then you got to throw in Evans. The problem is finding the right deal that works. For Bradley Beal, straight up, let's say, you could probably, if you threw in Sabonis, you threw in Kyle Quinn gets you to 9, you threw in Bojan gets you to 19, and then maybe throw in, I guess, a Corey Joseph or a Doug McDermott. That gets you probably there, plus a future pick. That probably gets you there. But I'm just saying, you look at it in the trade deadline this year or next offseason, you got to look at making a move for a number two guy. Bradley Beal would be that kind of player, in my opinion. We don't know who's going to be available. But you got to make a play. I just think you do. It's time, and I don't think you can just sit back and say, we're going to use our cap space. You got to actually make a trade. As a small market team, it is almost impossible to sign a guy. They are not going to go out there and be able to sign some big-name free agent. They're just not. I mean, barring, you know, a huge run in the playoffs that convinces, I don't even know, you're talking about maybe Jimmy Butler, but maybe you can get a guy on, like, a sign-and-trade. Maybe that would be your best bet kind of thing. But realistically, they should next, I would say, between the trade deadline and the next draft, they should be looking at making a move with guys they have. I think Turner could be on his way out because his contract is kind of a good trade piece and he's young and he has potential and he could fit places. Like, I think he would work, and obviously worked in Washington perfectly. So you have to just look at that, I think. As much as, like I said, you could keep both guys, I would do it, but it's dang near impossible. And maybe you could figure it out. Maybe next offseason you can use your cap space and just trade picks and, you know, and take on guys. Like, maybe you can say, well, off, you know, let's say you take Bradley Beal and Jan Mahimi at 43 and you have the cap space and you say, we'll take on them and we'll give you, you know, a first round pick or something like that. And maybe you throw in a guy like Kojo on a sign and trade, something like that. And we'll give you, you know, we'll give you some combination of like Turner, a pick and something basically to get Bradley Beal and Jan Mahimi. That could work, and that might work, and that wouldn't be a terrible deal. You know, I would, not that Jan Mahimi's any good and he can play here, but you know, Jan back in the Pacer uniform might not be terrible. Other guys, I haven't done a ton of research, and other guys, like I said, we're only 14 games in, and really, the trade deadline does not matter until December 15th. You know, if I'm the Pacers, I just wouldn't hesitate making a deal in February if there is one there, even if it sacrifices, you know, a playoff run this year. I would do that and just get the guy, because, like I said, Oladipo, after the season, has 1 year left, and at the end of the day, you're trying to convince him to stay. You know, if Oladipo has to go through a whole nother season where he's the main guy, and there's nobody else here, hear him, yeah, he might still stay because he's a Pacer loyal and whatever it is, but he also might look at where the grass is greener, might go to Los Angeles, he's from Washington. I mean, nothing's going to go there because they're kind of a dumpster fire, but maybe go to Miami. Like, he might look around and see who's recruiting me, where can I be. I don't know if he will, but I would just be nervous about that as all. I'm the Pacers, I'm a Pacer fan, or I'm in the ownership, or I'm in the front office. I'd be worried that he might look where the grass is greener, because the grass always looks greener on the other side. Give me your thoughts on this, you know, with the situation. I would love to see if you guys have other thoughts on who the Pacers could possibly trade for. I mean, it has to be a real number two. I'm not talking, you know, Tobias Harris or Lou Williams or something like that. I'm talking like a real number two who could really be the number, the guy next to Vic. You know, like a CJ McCollum to Damian Lillard type of number two. I said this in the start of the podcast. I'll say it to end. We are having a mailbag show probably Wednesday or Thursday, if not maybe both days. So send in your questions. Send in your effing questions to at Locked On Pacers, at TCNBA, or at FreedomAdam5. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Tony and I will be back tomorrow with our weekly show. Till then, have a great rest of your day.